All right, we're back. And with me is Dr. Harriet Lerner, one of our nation's most loved and respected relationship experts. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dance of Anger, which has sold over 4 million copies. Her newest book, Marriage Rules, a manual for the married and the coupled up. Open this book up anywhere and you'll find a rule to rescue you from the quicksands of marriage and couplehood. If you want to know what you should do, this book is for you. So we're going to jump right in and find out how much rewiring we need. Welcome, Dr. Harriet Lerner. Thank you for being here today on Talk with Francesca.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Thank you. So what inspired you to write Marriage Rules?
Well, actually, it was inspired by a food book. I was reading a book by Michael Pollan called Food Rules. And it had 64 very simple rules for healthful eating, which was all you needed to know. And they were things like, don't buy cereal that changes the color of the milk. And I suddenly got inspired. I thought, you know, I can do this for marriage.
Oh, good idea.
Now, admittedly, coupling up is more complicated than eating. But I
it depends who you are.
Do that one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, why the format, though, of rules? I mean, it sounds like a business plan. Not that I necessarily think a business plan in a marriage or being coupled up is a bad thing. But it does sound a little rigid.
Well, maybe I'm a secret bully.
All right. Well, anyway.
And, you know, when couples are under stress or one person is distressed in marriage, they really don't want to plow through a big, fat book with lots of theory. They want the answer to the question, what do I do, and therefore the rules.
Okay, so let's talk practically. If you've got, one partner who refuses to get help and there's a problem in the relationship, whether it be, reading marital rules or therapy or whatever, what do you do with that person? How do you get that person to be able to come around?
Well, it takes two people to be coupled up, and it takes only one person to make a relationship a whole lot better. So you don't need to pressure that person, to read the book or to go to therapy. Really, if one person is unhappy and has their motor running for change, and they're willing to experiment with some new behaviors, they can change the relationship in a really significant way.
For example?
Well, for example, by following the rules, whether it's that they begin to warm their partner's heart, and make a concerted effort to focus on the positive, even though their partner's being a big jerk, or they dial down the criticism because people become more allergic to criticism over time, and no one can survive in a marriage if they feel more judged than admired, or they learn to stop being so defensive. I mean, there's so many things that we can do that will change the pattern of the relationship.
Do men or women criticize more?
Women criticize more.
Why would you think that would be, or why is that?
Why do women criticize more? By the way, your question reminds me, there's a greeting card, and it says on the front, if a man is alone in the woods with no woman to criticize him, is he still a schmuck? And men and women have a very different response to the card because men find it really funny and they say, that's me, my wife is always criticizing me. And women have a somewhat different reaction. Women say, if the poor guy is so beleaguered by criticism, why doesn't he pay attention to it? Why doesn't he listen to it? Why doesn't he let my voice and
be
my
heard.
Pain affect him?
Yeah.
So one reason that women criticize more is that often the man is not responding. He's not whatever the complaint is, like that the housework isn't being shared equally or whatever, that he's not hearing her. Mm-hmm. And another reason is that when a couple is under stress, it's more common that the man will distance and remove himself from the relationship, and that the woman will sort of move toward the center and fight it out. Mm. So that's another reason. And also, you know, I find even for myself, for example, if I'm unhappy, if I'm anxious about something, I can just go on automatic pilot with my husband with a million little directions and advice giving, and I'll have seven criticisms of Steve's shopping trip because he bought four ripe bananas, and how can he be so stupid and wasteful, you know, because three of them are going to go into the compost heap.
But those are really kind of minor issues, don't you think? I mean, I wouldn't really...
They're minor issues, but...
they build up.
When you have a pattern of criticizing or advice-giving, because although when we give advice, our intention is to be helpful, it shades into criticism when there are too many little corrections. So it's not each little thing. You know, it's not that my husband got too many ripe bananas, but ultimately, if there are too many criticisms, it's going to erode the very foundation of the marriage because people can't survive in a relationship, or at least not happily, if they feel more criticized than respected.
So when you talk about warming things up, I think that I just got your book the other day, so I just had, although you can read it very quickly, but you had a 5-to-1 ratio. I kind of liked that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, actually, marriage and couple relationships can tolerate a lot of criticism if there is a foundation of deep friendship and respect. And the research shows, this is Dr. John Gottman's formula for divorce busting, that if you have a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative comments, then the negativity and the criticism is unlikely to lead to a divorce. And actually, I think that when couples have a 2-to-1 ratio of positive to negative, they're doing pretty good.
Well, that's a big difference between 5-to-1 and 2-to-1. But regardless, how do you break the rules of criticism then in a marriage? I mean, if that's kind of the pattern, sometimes there can be a pattern that keeps going on and on and on, and then you get into this rut. So,
well, first you have to observe the pattern. You really have to observe yourself. And then you might try the experiment. I have a rule to limit yourself to one a day, like a vitamin, you know, just as an exercise. And the other really important rule is to say it shorter, to say your criticism in 3 sentences or less. For example, you said that you would call if you're going to be more than 20 minutes late back from work. This is the third time in the past couple of weeks you haven't called. I need you to call. That's 3 sentences. Because sometimes our partner has stopped listening, and the sheer number of words and sentences and the intensity or edge in our voice is the culprit. So say it shorter.
And be less defensive, I guess.
A really important thing about criticism is to stick with behavior and facts and not sort of damning global shaming comments like, you're late again, you didn't call, what's wrong with you, I can never count on you. And that's very important, too. And to remember, aim for the 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca. I'm Francesca, and we're speaking with Dr. Harriet Lerner, author of Marriage Rules, a manual for the married and the coupled up. So how do we then get a grip on our defensiveness?
Well, again, to recognize when we're being defensive, because defensiveness is in the body, and it's automatic. And as soon as someone starts to criticize us, as soon as our partner says, we have to talk, that defensiveness is immediately there. It's normal, it's automatic, but defensiveness is the arch enemy of listening. So we do, what happens with defensiveness is that we listen, someone's, a partner is criticizing us, and we listen for the exaggerations, the distortions, the inaccuracies, which will inevitably be there. In other words, we listen for the part we don't agree with so that we can correct the other person and get up on our high horse and make our case.
Mm-hmm.
We need to listen to the part that we can agree with. We need to listen to really understand. And if only we would listen with the same passion that we feel about wanting to be heard.
Talk about pure listening. I mean, that's something that few have really mastered, I think. It's so natural, especially when you're in an argument, to be thinking about your rebuttal, your answer. And I guess that you call that defensive listening, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you stop that?
Well, pure listening requires a lot of us. It requires us to quiet our mind and to slow down our breathing. And most important, to enter the conversation with the intention that we will only listen and that we'll only ask questions to better understand what our partner was saying. So that means no interrupting, no correcting facts, no counterpunching,
mm-hmm.
and no saying anything that will leave the other person feeling unheard or cut short. And this is so difficult to do. That my suggestion, you know, here's a really good rule to try, is that you think in terms of having two conversations with your partner, and you say to yourself, this is conversation number one. And in conversation number one, I will only ask questions. I will only really try to get it. I will say to her, do I have this right? Is there more you haven't told me? I'm really going to think about this. And then in the second conversation, you can define your differences. You can say, you know, I was thinking about a conversation. I believe you were right that I ignored you at the party. But the piece I don't agree with is I don't agree that I was responsible for your drinking because I'm in charge of my behavior. I'm not responsible for your behavior. So conversation one, only listen. Conversation two, you can go in and define how you see it differently. Try that one. It can change your whole relationship.
Yeah, that's a great one. I like that one myself. So how, let's talk a little bit about respecting differences. I mean, that's a big one. You know, we always think that our way is the right way.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah, humans have a great deal of difficulty with differences. And, of course, we secretly believe it would be a better world if everyone thought and felt and reacted and believed and voted as we do. I have this problem myself. But marriage does require a huge respect for differences. I have a cartoon in my consulting room that I really love. And it shows a dog and a cat in bed together. And the dog is reading a book called Dogs Who Love Too Much. And the cat is saying, I'm not distancing. Damn it, I'm a cat.
Yeah. That's right. There are different types of people.
It's a great cartoon, right? Because often we try to change, a cat into a dog, and
right.
Won't work.
So, but that's not so easy to do. I mean, that's a great cartoon, but how do you really do that?
I think you begin with an appreciation that we're all different. That you and your partner see the world through a totally different filter. You see it through the filter of your gender, your unique family history, your culture, your genetic makeup. And the differences don't mean that one person is right and one person is wrong. So if your way when you're upset is to go into therapy and talk about things and process things, and your partner's way, he's more of a do-it-yourselfer and prefers, you know, therapy is not his thing, and he wants more space to figure things out without advice.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that one way is better or one person is right and one is wrong. The problem, and I talk about this in The Dance of Anger, is the dance, because, you know, one person pursues and the other distances, and the more he distances, the more she pursues, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right. All right. Let's talk about bottom lines. Explain what that means. In your book, you talked about bottom lines.
Well, sometimes we can become so respectful of differences that we start making excuses for our partner.
Right.
Like, oh, he can't vacuum the rug. His penis will get in the way. No, I'm exaggerating, but I'm just exaggerating a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, people make excuses. So while we need to have a profound respect for differences, we also need to have a bottom line. And the bottom line is your core values, beliefs, priorities that are not negotiable under relationship pressures. So that is the place where you say, you know, this is what I will not do. This is not acceptable to me. I will not stay in the conversation. When you're talking to me this way, you need to approach me differently with respect, or I can't be here as your partner. It's that place, it's that line where we say, no.
Right. I'm going to go out for an hour, 2 hours, the afternoon, whatever, because, I get you. I hear you.
Right, because if you have no bottom line, if you're in a relationship where you have an anything goes policy, then that relationship is going to spiral downward. Whether it's with your husband, your kid, your mother, your best friend, we all need to have
boundaries.
A bottom line.
Right, or a boundary. So tell us about a great story of a troubled relationship that one or several of your rules changed the course in a significant way.
Well, sometimes it's the littlest thing, but it takes a lot of courage to follow the simplest rules. For example, a man who has never been able to apologize opens up a conversation with his wife where he says, I'm really sorry for my part of the problem. You know, this is something I want to repair and I want to make up to you and I won't do again. Or a woman, for example, who always approaches her husband in a rat-a-tat-tat way, a very intense rat-a-tat-tat way, makes a change where she says it's shorter and slower and she ratchets down the intensity and she brings up only one criticism at a time. And that change is enormously difficult and it can make a huge difference. So those are, you know, these sound like little examples, little things.
Not really. Not really. I don't think they are. I think that they can make significant changes.
Exactly. And here's a huge one, by the way, going back to listening, is to invite the very conversation you dread. Like a man, for example, who couldn't stand hearing his wife talk anymore about her worries about their son, Billy. So his eyes would roll back in his head and he would just sort of space her out or say, look, I can't hear about this. And what he did is remarkable. He initiated a conversation about the very thing he dreaded with the intention that he would only listen. So he said to her, I want to meet with you for coffee Sunday after breakfast, and I want you to tell me everything you're worried about with our son Billy, because I really haven't listened well. I haven't gotten it. And then he met with her, and he took for as long as she wanted to talk and only listened to her concerns about their son, her worries about their son. He didn't jump in. He didn't correct facts. He didn't say, oh, my God, like, you're catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. He just listened to get it. And that made a huge difference in the marriage.
Is that like in warming up? Is that in that category there, or am I off track?
Well, it will warm it up, but it's really in the listening and defensiveness category, the rules that I have on. I have a chapter called something like Overcome Your LDD, which is what I call listening deficit disorder. Causes more problems than ADD, believe me. And so that's part of listening, mm-hmm. where instead of muzzling the person and stonewalling and saying, look, I can't hear this anymore, you actually invite the conversation where you only really try to get it. And people are afraid to do this because they're afraid they'll open up the floodgates. Yeah. The person will go on forever. It's the opposite. If you try to muzzle your partner and you say, I can't listen to this, I can't listen to this,
right.
They become more obsessed.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's give us your, we just have a couple minutes left. Any final words on wisdom on the subject of listening that you didn't already share with us?
I would say again what I said earlier, because it's so important, and that is, if only we would listen with the same passion that we feel about wanting to be heard. How we talk and how we listen determines how our relationship goes, but most of us are much more motivated to work on the talking part than on the listening part.
Dr. Harriet Lerner, author of Marriage Rules, a manual for the married and the coupled up. Thank you for being on Talk with Francesca today. How can those interested get your book?
Marriage Rules is available anywhere online and bookstores. It's easy enough to do.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Thanks so much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. It's time to say until next week, but you don't have to wait until next week for us to chat. Send me an email at host@talkwithfrancesca.com, and I'll get right back to you. And if you want to know more about Talk with Francesca and what's on the horizon, visit my website, Talk with Francesca, and click on upcoming shows. Have a fantastic week, and I hope I gave you something to talk about.